Dick. It's called Black Messiah on the next Tavis Smiley Show from PRI.
Tomorrow at noon here on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts here in the Bay Area. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week we'll have a live performance from Daniel Riera and Camille Mai, who are performing on Saturday at the Red Poppy Art House. In addition, you'll learn about the Opera San Jose performances of Tosca from the musical director, Joseph Marchesio. Bus pianist Keith Porter Snell will talk about his collaboration with the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony for this Saturday's concert, conducted by Don Harms. Peter Robinson also stops in with a film review on the latest Amy Winehouse documentary and offers some Shakespeare suggestions for the waning days of summer. Stay with us. Red Poppy Art House on Folsom Street here in San Francisco will have a special concert, the Daniel Riera Ensemble, on Saturday, September 5th. Doors open at 7. Drawing some inspiration from 70s jazz and funk and the rhythmic tug of post-Dilla hip-hop, Daniel Riera will also premiere works for flute, wind controller, and electric ensemble. Let's hear a bit of recorded music of Daniel Riera, and then he'll be live in studio to talk about this Saturday's performance. some of the original mix of Daniel Riera that you'll hear this Saturday. It's a tune called Evolving. And Daniel's in studio here to talk about the recording and what he's going to be doing on Saturday. Daniel, welcome to KLW.
Thank you.
So let's talk first about that mix. How did you come up with the tunes, or what are you going to be doing over that?
Okay, so what you're hearing in that is actually the iwi, the electronic wind instrument that I play, and that composition I made used by setting up a chord patch, so to speak, in the computer. So when I play one note on the iwi, actually a chord comes out, a three-note chord, and then I can shift the different chord types using some of the controllers that I have on this thing. So that allows me, as a flute player, you know, I'm playing the fingerings very similarly to a flute or a saxophone, but I'm able to create polyphonic sounding music.
Neat. Well, we have to back up for listeners that don't know what an iwi is. So it's an electronic wind instrument.
Yeah. So
hold it up to the microphone so people can see it. No, just kidding.
A lot of people, when they see it, they say, oh, it looks like an electric clarinet, or it looks like the Star Wars Cantina Band instrument. And I don't mind the comparison because I embrace the future forwardness of it and what it's allowed me to do, which is kind of combine my background in jazz flute playing and improvisation and marry that to the world of electronic music and synthesizers, which I've had a long passion for and done a lot of work in the computer. But going from the mouse to playing this and I'm literally putting my breath into each note. So I have to support each note with my breath to make it sound just like on a flute or a saxophone. And that gives you so much control over the dynamics, the how loud or how soft.
Well, let's hear what this baby can do then, because I'm fascinated by it. I'm a flutist myself, so I haven't really delved into the electronic world. My initial reaction would be, oh, there's not that much flexibility. It's going to be rigid. So with this, with your own breath, you're changing some subtleties in this. So if you could just give us an example of what this instrument can do.
Sure. Should we start into...
Let's just show a couple of examples of the different sounds that can come out of this thing.
Okay. So this is what I'm talking about with the chord parts.
Give it a go again. That's the right level here. There we go. That's really cool. I mean, you're fingering just like you would finger your wind instrument, a saxophone or a flute, but are you following certain note patterns that you've developed? You're not playing a scale, but is it just you're hearing and adjusting the way your brain is taking you?
So the way this patch is set up, and there's many different ones that I use, but so this one is like when I play a single note, it's going to sound... You're going to hear two notes. It's tuned in the interval of a perfect fifth. And so the iwi will also allow me to play two notes at once if I slur them together. So that is, if I play two notes using one breath, then it will sustain the first note while I switch to the next note.
Let's hear that.
So if you have a patch that is two notes to begin with, and then you layer that on top of itself, then you have four notes. So that's how I'm able to create four-note polyphony.
That's wild. And you can, with this instrument, you can do all kinds of different sounds as well. Let's hear some of the panoply of an instrument.
Okay, so, and by the way, these are all sounds that I've created. So this would be an example of a bass. Thank you.
That is totally wild. And it's all stuff that you manipulated yourself for your for a unique sound.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I love about this is because it has the ability to be so personalized. You know, when I play the flute, you know, I can make it sound like me to an extent with, you know, my embouchure and the ideas that I have. But on this, I can completely transform, you know, which is what keyboard players have been doing for decades now. But, you know, and I've always envied the ability to change sound at a moment's notice and to cover a wide range of parts too, you know. So I can play a bass line, I can play chords, I can play melodies, of course. So, you know, here's like the on the high end.
That's marvelous. You talked earlier about the fact that you are a San Francisco native.
Yes.
So where did you get your musical training?
Let's see. It started at Buena Vista Elementary School. I studied with John Calloway, was my first music teacher. And for those of you that don't know, John Calloway is a very famous and longstanding San Francisco local legend of jazz flute. But I had the honor to be him... I mean, to have him as my first ever music teacher, teaching me recorder in the fourth grade. And then I switched to flute and studied with him privately. I went on to go to San Francisco School of the Arts high school, and then Berklee College of Music. And yeah, since then, I've actually become a teacher myself. I teach at Academy of Art University now.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to ask you to be joined now by your colleague that will be singing this Saturday at the Red Poppy Outhouse, Camille Mai. And Camille is a composer in her own right, as well as a visual artist, and studied at the California College of the Arts. Welcome, Camille.
Thanks.
So tell me a little bit, Daniel, about what you guys are going to do on Saturday, and then we'll hear some live performance.
Okay. So a lot of the music that I've been creating up to this now, up to this point, has been music that I've created by myself in the computer, you know, so in the style of electronic music and hip-hop. And I've been really dying to get these ideas and have them interpreted by a live ensemble, which to me has always been the highest form of music. So what I've done is I've taken 8 songs that I've created this way, and it's pretty much already fleshed out, you know, sounds designed how I want them, and then I've brought this to the ensemble and they've interpreted it beautifully. So I'm going to have a at the core it's a quartet. I have a Dame drummer on the drums, fantastic drummer from Oakland, and I have Parker Grant. He's going to be playing his vintage Rhodes piano, and I have Skylar Carr on bass, San Francisco young lion, and that's the core trio, I mean core quartet. And then Camille is going to be joining me singing a couple songs, one of which we'll play for you a bit later. And I also have a trumpet player, Noah Frank, and a bass clarinetist, Jeannie Somas, joining me.
You herded a lot of cats for Labor Day weekend, let me tell you.
I did, that's
pretty amazing.
And actually, Jeannie, I only lined up yesterday afternoon was that when I finally finalized the lineup, and I let her know with hours notice before the rehearsal, and she graciously cut her date short with her boyfriend to come rehearse with us at 9 p.m. So
nice. It sounds like quite an event happening this Saturday at the Red Poppy Art
House. Well, it's just been so amazing seeing all these musicians who I very much respect and look up to, and getting them on board with this project and hearing what they have to say about the music. And it's just an honor to be making this happen.
Fantastic. Well, let's hear some live performance now here at KLW Studios. What are we going to hear?
So this is an example of how Camille and I perform as a duet. And we actually just got back from a trip throughout Europe where we were doing this act on the streets. So I'm going to be doing a bit of looping with the iwi, so layering recordings of that in real time, and also some beatboxing. And Camille, why don't you tell them the name of this tune?
So this is Cherish the Day, and first made famous by Sade, but the cover we love is by Robert Glasper and Lala Hathaway.
Live music here in Studio A at KLW. Daniel Riera and part of his ensemble, electronic and otherwise, and live.
Sorry, I have to stop it there. This looping thing is tricky, and I'm just getting into the swing of it, so give me one more try.
Sure, no problem. What he means by looping is that he's actually playing live, and then he's telling the machine to stop that and then to repeat it over and over again, but it's got to be perfectly coordinated, so it's a challenge.
To heaven. cherish the day. Don't be afraid, won't go astray.
That's live performance by Camille Mai and Daniel Riera. They're at the Red Poppy Art House this Saturday evening. Information at redpoppyarthouse.org. Thank you both for coming in today. Fantastic stuff. You're really fortunate to have such a great band of characters to be helping you out on Saturday.
Thank you. Yeah, if you like that, you got to hear it with the live band, because it's just a whole other level hearing this music come to life in that way.
Thanks again for coming in, guys. Once again, Red Poppy Art House for more information about the Daniel Riera Ensemble's performance on Saturday. I'm David LaTulipe. You're listening to Open Air. Still to come, a conversation about Ravel's Concerto for the Left Hand and Orchestra that'll be done with the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. Opera San Jose doing Tosca. Peter Robinson with some Shakespeare ideas. And now, as they say, for something completely different. And with that, not much of an overture at all, begins the dramatic Tosca, Giacomo Puccini, opening the Opera San Jose season next Saturday with 5 additional performances through the 29th at the California Theater on South First Street in downtown San Jose. Puccini's classic tale of a beauty being pursued by a beast of a man, rendered as the villainous Scarpia and sung in San Jose by Matthew Hanscom. The title role will be co-sung by Elizabeth Baldwin and Olga Chemisheva, who will be making her company debut. The heroic tenor, Cavaradossi, in the person of Kirk Doherty, was scheduled to join me in studio today, but is under the weather, wisely preserving his energy and voice for the upcoming performances. However, I am very pleased to welcome back to the KLW Studios music director and principal conductor of Opera San Jose, Joseph Marchesio, to talk about the production and upcoming season. In addition to serving as principal conductor for Tosca, Maestro Marchesio will lead the company premiere of A Streetcar Named Desire, which was co-commissioned by the San Francisco Opera with music by Andre Previn, and which had Renee Fleming in the role of Blanche at its 1998 premiere. San Jose's performances will be this coming spring of Streetcar. Mr. Marchesio has conducted 14 productions for Opera San Jose, is also staff conductor and cover at the San Francisco Opera, where he was at the ready and worked on productions of Showboat, The Flying Dutchman, the San Francisco premieres of Jake Heggie's Moby Dick and John Adams Nixon in China, as well as the world premieres of Mark Adamo's The Gospel of Mary Magdalene and Tobias Picker's Dolores Claiborne. Joe, welcome back to KLW.
Thank you very much.
Very happy to have you on such short notice as well. Well, to start the new season, you can't go wrong with Puccini, can you?
Never. Never.
There's a lot going on there. We can't assume that everyone listening is familiar with the operatic classics, so maybe you could give us a Tosca 101. It's got everything. Politics, lust, sacrifice, murder, take your pick.
It does, and it has... Tosca is an opera singer playing the role of an opera singer, so it almost has a kind of reality TV aspect to it, as someone almost playing themselves, a diva who plays themselves. And naturally, when you have an opera that's centered around a diva, that is going to be a very popular character for singers to want to portray on top of its celebrated music and its... dramatic characterization.
Well, there's a bit of operatic intrigue involved in Puccini securing the rights for the story, isn't there?
Is there?
Well, what I learned...
Please, share.
...is that the writer of the story, Victorien Sardou, originally gave the rights to a composer by the name of Alberto Franchetti, but Puccini's music publisher, Ricordi, wisely, and thanking the rest of the world in hindsight, went to this guy and said, look, you don't want this story. You're not going to make anything of the story. And Puccini just snapped it right up right after that.
Really? That's because I know that they had the situation with Bohème, in which he and another Italian composer both wrote a poem to compete with one another. So obviously he went back to the well to continue preempting other composers from taking his subjects.
Well, like I said, posterity is all the better for it. Now, it seems to me that that's quite a difference between I've had contemporary playwrights on before who talk about their play, but they don't want to give anything away. In the operatic world, we go in, for the most part, opera lovers or even people that are a little bit familiar with music history, go in knowing exactly what's going to happen.
And they, of course, also print the synopsis in the programs.
So that's a big difference.
I know when I go to see operas that I haven't seen before or don't know about, like Fanciulla, when I saw it, the first time I ever saw it was a couple years ago when San Francisco did it. Adriana Lecouvreur, I saw a couple of months ago. I had never seen the opera. I try not to know anything about it going in. And an opera like Tosca, which has such a twist at the end, you kind of do yourself a little bit of a disservice if you know how it's going to end, because it must be the most unusual ending of at least a mainstream general audience opera that there is. And it's also so famous and such a classic ending that you don't remember. Vertigo was a movie I hadn't seen until I was a lot older, and I saw it when they reissued it maybe 10 years ago, and similar kind of ending in a way, and I remember just being absolutely blown away by that ending. And I wish that people who come and see Tosca would also leave not with that kind of surprise that that is what actually is going to occur, and not be waiting for it.
Hmm. Speaking of surprises, is this going to be a straightforward setting, or
yes,
we have contemporized it?
No, it is. Yesterday was the first tech in the theater, so it was the first time that I got to see the sets, and I can say that they look absolutely fantastic, but they are rooted, clearly, I guess, 1800, I guess, is where it takes place.
And Rome being such almost a fourth major character in the piece.
Yes. And it's an opera also that is difficult to, because Puccini really dictates a lot of the particulars from the setting to the timing. So it's hard to get out of. I mean, people kind of put it up to fascist times, and there's been some interpretations of it later, but it's not an opera, I think, that really benefits from that kind of reinterpreting. It carries the story absolutely the way that it is done. And I'm not a purist by any means.
And it's so well-crafted. It's so compact and
extremely taut. A little over two hours with two intermissions, because there are three acts. I guess it's about 2.5 hours all told. First two acts are about 45 minutes each, and then the second act is about 30 minutes, 25 minutes.
The great conductor Herbert von Karajan was quoted once as saying that every conductor should do Tosca once a year to get all his aggressions out.
Wow.
Because there's a lot of evil music going on.
Well, he certainly had a lot of aggressions to get out.
You've got such a strong orchestra to work with. I have to give a shout out to my dear friend Isabelle Chapuis.
Oh, I saw her yesterday. We had our first music read yesterday afternoon. And yes, she is wonderful. I love her so much. And she's been with the company, I think, from the very, 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 very beginning.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about your creative team for this particular production. Or are they all involved with the whole season?
The singers are, for the most part, we have a resident company, and so we use those singers for each of the shows. But, for example, next opera we're doing is Figaro, and there's many more characters in Figaro. And so above and beyond the residents, we hire guests for each of these. Elizabeth, as you said, is a guest. Both of the Toscas are guests, because our resident soprano is not a dramatic soprano. She sings Gilda or Michaela or the Countess, but when we chose Tosca, we recognized that we would have to go out and find someone specifically for this role. And Olga came in having been recommended by someone, and we had never heard her, and we were blown away by her intensity. She has that kind of very specific Russian intensity and focused wildness that, for me, is a necessary precondition to consider doing a Tosca.
Joseph Marchesa talking about the Opera San Jose production of Tosca coming up beginning next week with performances through the 29th down in San Jose. You mentioned briefly that Opera San Jose is a repertory company, which is unusual in the United States, isn't it?
Yes.
A resident company.
Each season we have a group of residents and also associate residents that come for 1 year or multiple years, depending on what seasons we're planning and where they are in their own lives and journeys. And they sing in all four productions in various capacities. And then to complement that, we guest out the other roles and we work through it this time. Sometimes we, like Elizabeth Baldwin, who's singing the last two Toscas, she was our first lady in Magic Flute, which we did the previous season. So we still have connections with people that we have come back, even if they're not formally residents.
And you must have some very conscious efforts to reach out to younger audiences.
Yes, well, we have outreach productions and we have educational productions that we coordinate throughout the year to go to schools and to go to various community groups to do either operas or scenes or, yeah, we'll do smaller operas that are written expressly for that purpose. But there is, as almost every company has to have, an effort to pick up the slack in music education that has been kind of sloughed off in traditional educational environments.
Mm-hmm. Well, more power to you for getting those newer audiences involved in such an amazing art form.
It's an absolute necessity.
Let's get back to, well, before we end with an excerpt from Tosca, let me ask you about you're now in your second year as artistic director, music director.
Music director.
And are you still doing work with the San Francisco Opera as well?
Yes. I was on Troyen in the summer, and in October I'll be on Meistersinger. So I enjoy it. It's a good division because OSJ, you get a lot of more standard works and works that aren't 4+ hours, 5 hours, because that would be a real killer. And so to get the opportunity to do Troyen, which is an extremely rare opera, even under the most international conditions, or Meistersinger, which is, you know, 5 hours long, is not something that gets to come your way. So to have that balance is it's something that I'm extremely grateful for.
And as a cover conductor, you have to be ready at a moment's notice and to jump into the pit as well as you're doing preparation.
Yeah, a staff conductor is... There'll be shows in which the conductor, for whatever reason, won't arrive for the first week or 10 days, and they'll need someone to do the rehearsal during that period. There was one show that I worked on in which the conductor had a nervous breakdown, and they had to scramble to find another one.
Wow.
So the institution needs to be able to rely on someone who'll be able to do it while the mishigas of cast changes and international schedules become realigned.
Let's say it's operatic, to be
indeed.
Sure.
Indeed. And as a music director myself, I appreciate that now as someone who also is alert to these kind of things that can happen in your own company.
Well, we wish you a fantastic start to this one.
Thank you.
With Tosca by Puccini. Set up, if you will, one of the most memorable arias from Act Two, Visi d'Arte.
Which Puccini, even though it's extremely famous, he was considering cutting it because he thought that it stopped the action, which we can only be glad that he didn't. And this... Tosca has been emotionally and psychologically, you know, brutalized by Scarpia because he wants both to have her carnally and also to reveal where this traitor is that her lover is hiding. And she's trying to refuse to give this up, even though she can hear them torturing him in the other room. And at one point, she reaches her breaking point and sings about how she has lived for art and love, and how could God have done this to her, given how righteous and generous she has been in her life.
Let's hear that now. Not before I thank you for coming in, Joe, and I wish you a fantastic performance.
Thank you very much.
As well as Streetcar coming up.
Thank you.
In this recording, we're going to hear as Scarpia, Carlo Gelfi, and as Floria Tosca, Fiorenza Ceralins. Visi d'arte. Fiorenza Ceralins in that recording conducted by Zubin Mehta of Visi d'Arte from Puccini's Tosca at Opera San Jose, operasj.org for more information. Well, Saturday concert options, apart from Mr. Riera's flutifying and electronicizing at Red Poppy Art House, include a full orchestral experience from the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. Music director Don Harms leads the ensemble and César Franck's Symphony in D Minor, Dmitri Shostakovich's Festive Overture, and Maurice Ravel's Piano Concerto for the Left Hand in D Major, a work that was commissioned, composed by Ravel between 1929 and 30, and commissioned by the Austrian pianist Paul Wittgenstein, who lost his right arm during World War I. Another San Francisco native, Keith Porter Snell, will perform the work this Saturday evening. Keith specializes in piano music written to be played with the left hand alone. Back in 1986, he was diagnosed with focal dystonia in his right hand, which resulted in him, for a time, withdrawing from professional life as a pianist and refocusing his energies on teaching. He now makes his home in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where he is currently visiting artist faculty at New Mexico State University, is it that? New Mexico School of Music. Keith, welcome to KLW.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
Looking forward to perform. Full disclosure, I'm singing in the choir, so to speak. I'm playing a principal flute for this Ravel, and it's a marvelous discovery. I mean, it's an incredible part.
Some great flute stuff in there, huh?
There is. From a master, the master orchestrator.
Yeah. Incredible for winds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, the opening is quite phenomenal. Using the contrabassoon, which Ravel used to such marvelous effect in his Mother Goose Suite as the Beast in the Beauty and the Beast excerpt. Let's hear just a little bit of that opening, and then we'll talk about the left-hand repertoire, and we'll hear a little bit more of the work. Heard that right. It was not a bullfrog there. That was the contrabassoon in the very unusual opening for a concerto, isn't it?
It is. It's very unusual. I mean, it's a big band, you know, that he uses. The orchestra is enormous with just so many wonderful instruments and uses for them. I think giving equal weight to all of the wind instruments as well as the string section, which really makes it just kind of overwhelming.
Talk to me a little bit about Paul Wittgenstein and his
Well, the whole thing is, and one of the reasons I'm really excited to be playing this piece right now, I think it's very timely. Maybe we feel this more in Europe than in the United States. But, of course, between 2014 and 2018 is the centenary of the commemoration of the First World War. And because Pianist Paul Wittgenstein lost his right arm in the First World War, and because he was from such a very wealthy family, one of the, if not the most wealthy families in Austria.
At the time he was doing all of these commissions, I think the family net worth was in the billions.
Yeah, it was enormous. And even before then, they were very involved in the arts. I mean, Brahms played in their home in salons, and so did Strauss, and premiered works in their home. So they were very involved with great musicians of the day. And Paul became very determined that he was going to have a career as a one-armed pianist. And they commissioned not only Ravel, but almost all of the great composers of the day. Prokofiev, Britten, Korngold, Franz Schmidt. I mean, it's quite a long list.
Paul Hindemith, Richard Strauss
Hindemith,
also contributed
yes.
to the repertoire.
Yes, exactly.
And
exactly.
More recently, Gary Graffman has been continuing the idea of commissioning for the left hand.
Yes, he has. He's been doing a lot of left hand. He as well has lost the use of his right hand, as has Leon Fleischer. And Fleischer was the one actually premiered the Hindemith piece that was discovered fairly recently. So,
has the dystonia gone away to a certain extent, or do you still have a...
No, it's there.
It's there.
It's always there.
And is it functional as a... In a way, I mean, are you tempted sometimes to put that right hand up to help you along?
Well, that's funny. I was just thinking about it. I really ripped my skin last night in rehearsal on the glissando, so I think I may use my right hand for the glissandos in the performance. But no, you know, if a piece is well written for the left hand, you're actually not tempted to use the right knife. It feels like a complete piece of music and performance, you know, if it's well written.
Well, you shared an anecdote last night that you used a device during the Korngold left-handed performance.
Yeah, I was playing the Korngold, the quartet, which is for two violins, cello, and piano left hand. And I was on a Burzendorfer that had very sharp edges on the keys, and I ripped myself up on that one, too. And the first violinist reached into her purse and pulled out this Louis Vuitton coin purse. And I kept that at the edge of the piano. When I needed to do glissandos, I used the coin purse.
Well, this would be the performance to accessorize if this is the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony.
Well, you know, and I have to say, I'm so thrilled to be in San Francisco with the Rainbow Symphony, especially during this great year of the Supreme Court decision. I think it's pretty exciting.
It's very
exciting. So lots of things converging.
And Dawn Harms has done such a spectacular job with us on really not that many rehearsals. We've got this major performance on Saturday night. It's going to be at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. The dress rehearsal went beautifully. I'm sure you're looking forward to playing in that hall, too.
I am. It's gorgeous. Wonderful to be at the conservatory, which is where I actually went to the prep department of the conservatory when I was a kid. So lots of things converging here.
Coming home,
exciting.
Coming home, but in a new space, of course.
Exactly, that's right. Very much so.
Keith Porter Snell, featured soloist for the Concerto for Left Hand of Maurice Ravel, part of the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony's Saturday concert at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. Shostakovich's festive overture, for which I have the joy of playing piccolo on, will also be on the program, and the Symphony in D Minor of César Franck. Thanks for coming in today, Keith.
My pleasure. Thanks, David.
And I'm looking forward to performing with you.
Thank you.
Let's hear a little bit of a different performer. We're doing this. This is Christian Zimmerman with Pierre Boulez performing a little bit of the Maurice Ravel Concerto for the Left Hand. Just a tease of the Ravel Concerto for Left Hand, which you can hear Keith Porter Snell perform on Saturday evening with the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony. I'm David LaTulipe. It's Open Air, and it's a day of contrasts of open air. And now, once again, something completely different.
I'm all for you, baby, it's all.
Two iconic voices of this era, Amy Winehouse there with Tony Bennett and Body and Soul. Here to talk about why we're talking about Amy Winehouse is Peter Robinson, our regular contributor. Hey, Peter.
Hi, David. Good to be here. And I've chosen that little piece. It's a duet. It comes from the documentary, which is called Amy. And the high point, I think, of the documentary is this singing between her and Tony Bennett. And I think Tony Bennett really proves, I want to say, what a gentleman he is, because Amy gets into a kind of semi-diva mood. She can't quite get the tune. Her voice isn't there. And he calms her down beautifully. So the scene opens with the pre-recording in the studio, and they go into Body and Soul. And while they're going into it, he pays enormous tribute to her voice. He sees her as a long line of jazz vocalists in line with Ella Fitzgerald, Aretha Franklin, and just brings her to that place where she finds her voice and we get this superb rendition. Well, anyhow, I highly recommend the documentary. It's called Amy. It's directed by Asif Kapadia. And we all know it's a sad story, but it's also an honest story. And as we follow her career, and they've had wonderful gifts from the archives of her life, starting as a teenager in North London, and her friends from that particular period who stayed with her throughout, Julia Ashby. And then we move into the high artistry, the celebrity culture that she became a victim of, and of course we move into the drugs and the alcohol and the whole cult of celebrity, which can make for difficult viewing. This is a great, talented person whose sad demise evolves as the documentary unfolds. Now, it's not hagiography, this is not a praise, and it's shot in a very interesting way. There is no narrator. So we hear each of the individuals who've known her, including her manager from the very early days, Nick Szymanski. We also see the father, who comes off pretty much as a villain, the boyfriend, who actually got her going on coke, another villain. And then we finally cut to the end, where she dies of alcoholic poisoning. Mm. And one of the wonderful things about the shooting of this documentary is when she's singing, they project the words onto the screen. So you're not only hearing the voice, but you're listening to the songs and reading them at the same time. And I think that is a kind of premonition, particularly the song about rehab, which was a big hit, that you begin to recognize that there in those lyrics is not only her life, but also her tragedy. Highly recommended. It's playing both here at the Embarcadero in San Francisco. It's in Marin. It's a great song story. It's a great human tragedy. It's also a very fine piece of filmmaking. Now, for something different, we're coming to the end of summer. It's the close of the Shakespeare season. And two tips if you're looking for something for this long weekend or up until the end of October. First, at Mill Valley Library, a pre-performance for the next 2 weeks, on the weekend, that is, of The Taming of the Shrew. And this is a really straightforward production. It's got a lot of laughs in it. And the actual scene at the back of that library is beautiful because it's set amongst the redwood trees. So you feel you're almost in how I visualize Shakespeare's England. The actors are in costume. It's directed by Carl Jordan. And the actors speak their lines. And I always recommend people, it begins at 2:30, but do arrive early because there's like 45 minutes of jugglers, sword fighting, just to get you in the mood of Elizabethan England. And Kate comes off as a fiery, feral cat. She meets her match. I highly recommend an afternoon packed with humour, well put together, and that is The Taming of the Shrew. It's in Mill Valley. It's at the Old Mill, which is at the back of the Mill Valley Library. It's part of the library. It is a free production. And it's good both for family, for kids. Everybody will get a laugh out of this one. And it's now in its 16th year of doing this special summer Shakespeare. And starting in 2 weeks is the close of the Cow Shakes program. And this time we're over to Shakespeare's great tragedy, King Lear. A good way to finish a season. Anthony Heald, who has acted in numerous Oregon Shakespeares, who's also in the Elephant Man. He's a face you'll recognize. He plays Lear. And he was talking about the fact that he's 65, which puts him, in his opinion, in the right age group to now to go into the story. The story, of course, is both Shakespearean, but it's also contemporary. How do you divide a kingdom? How do you settle your will? And you've got the two evil sisters, Regan and Goneril, and then you've got Cordelia. And in this production, as in Shakespeare's day, the Fool and Cordelia are actually played by the same person. They're never on stage at the same time. So you've got an authentic version of King Lear. You've got a very interesting summer production. And if you're interested in going out to Orinda, they do have a shuttle. You can take the BART out there. They pick you up. You can bring a picnic. And don't miss the pre-theatre talk by Philippa Kelly. She is the dramaturge for Cow Shakes, and she brings the story together. She gives you the setting. She outlines the key lines. And this is a great way to understand more deeply the story of a man who's on the edge of going mad into dementia and at the same time is measuring how to divide his kingdom based on a declaration of love. So in today's world of trust wills, of estate management, how to die, all those issues which we think are peculiar to the year 2015, Shakespeare indeed had written about them in the year 1605.
History does have a way of repeating itself, doesn't it?
It's a universal truth.
Human situation.
Here we go. And so those two tips in Mill Valley, Taming of the Shrew, and out at Cow Shakes in Orinda, King Lear.
CalShakes.org for information about King Lear. Looking forward to that. It's on my calendar already.
Good to see you, David.
Thanks, Peter, for coming in. And that just about does it for this edition of Open Air for the first September edition of Open Air. A reminder that our programs are archived at our website, kalw.org. There'll be links to some of the performances you just heard about in this jam-packed hour. Quite a show of contrasts, I'd say. Do hope that you take advantage of some of the wonderful things that are happening here in the Bay Area on this holiday weekend. My thanks today to Ashley Ann Kriegbaum for helping out, Neil Swinkles for herding cats initially. Neil's will be back with us live next week, we hope. And again, if you have a program suggestion, you can send it to me here at the station, david@kalw.org. If you'd like to see some featured group here in the Bay Area on the air for casual conversation about the Bay Area performing arts. Thanks again for listening.
This is Peter Thompson reminding you that there are three programs featuring acoustic music every Saturday here on KALW San Francisco. Folk Music and Beyond with Joanne Marr and Bob Campbell begins at 3 p.m. and is followed by Kevin Vance's A Patchwork Quilt at 5 and my own Bluegrass Signal at 6:30 p.m. You'll hear folk music from around the world and around the bay, including singer-songwriters, blues, Celtic, tropical, rootsy Americana, and yes, bluegrass, all presented with background and commentary, sometimes with musicians interviewed or playing live in the KALW studios. So please join us. Saturdays, 3 to 8 p.m., for an array of music and approaches you just can't hear anywhere but on KALW.
This is KALW San Francisco, where an hour of news from the BBC is next. It was recorded earlier for broadcast at this time. It's 2 o'clock.
BBC World Service. This is Tim Franks with NewsHour. Coming up, we hear from an aunt of Alan Kurdi, the three-year-old refugee found dead on a Turkish beach.
Help those people across in that water. Don't let them take that journey anymore. I don't want people to die anymore.
And as migrants suffer, Europe's leaders bicker.
The problem is not a European problem. The problem is a German problem. Nobody would like to stay in Hungary.
We'll bring you the latest developments across three continents. Also,
smart talk. We speak smart talk.
Small talk.
Yeah, smart talk.
Why small talk is big business in South Korea, and should a new bestseller even have been published? All that after a news bulletin.